All right, so we're talking about leaning into the pain today, which is the most uncomfortable place and something we actually really, really, really don't want to do, which is why we're talking about it. We do things all the time that we don't want to do, and I think that's part of us learning and growing is acknowledging all the things we skip when we try to avoid pain, but as we often learn, like, in the pain is where you grow and heal and change. So today's episode is about sitting in it and how that goes and what it feels like and what the point is.
I talk a lot in this episode because it's basically where I've been living for a while. And it's an evolution. I started doing it one way, and I don't think you can just jump into sitting in your mess the right way. You've got to do it the wrong way a couple of times.
Many times.
Many times.
Yeah.
Before you figure out, wow, this isn't serving me at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's try something different.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a good conversation. We hope you enjoy it.
Yeah. But before we get started, we have a super surprise for you. We're doing a live show.
Super surprise.
Super surprise. We don't have any music for it, but magic. Dun, 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 dun. I know.
Maybe you can't. That. You're not going to be able to get that out of your head.
No. This Friday, June 28th at 7 p.m. here at Front Room Studio, we will be doing our first Not Terrible live show. It is our first, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Just making sure. Is there one I forgot about? No.
We did like a live Facebook thing once. No, Instagram.
Instagram. We did that once. That was fun. So instead of watching us on the internet, come watch us in person. We're going to be taking questions. So if you would do us a favor and send your questions and comments to notterriblepodcast@gmail.com, and you can get your tickets on our Facebook page.
Yeah, we would love to see you. We've got some fun things planned. If you're not local and you can't come, this will be released as a bonus episode sometime in July. So you'll get part of it, but obviously we'll have to edit some things out because I'm sure I will say inappropriate things in front of a live audience because I'll get nervous and sweat.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we'll take pictures and post them when so that you guys can see Mary's pitters. How about that? All right.
Please do. All right, so this is a review from KC2011-4400, and they write, love these ladies. My favorite episode so far was about minimalism in your home. Thank you for getting me home from work once a week. We asked and got some new reviews recently. You can tell us about your favorite episode. Tell us why you love us. Give us 5 stars. We love to hear and read your reviews online. Thank you for doing that.
I got a private message the other day from somebody's review that we read, and they were like, oh my gosh, that was a highlight of my week. Thanks so much for reading mine. Yeah. So if you want to hear your screen name on our podcast, I know it sounds very exclusive and it sounds really, really important, but send us a review. And as always, if you give us 5 stars, we would really appreciate it.
All right. Hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome to Not Terrible with your hosts, Jess Hooker and Mary Graham. Jess is a part-time vegan yogi. You can find her on her motorcycle, usually heading to therapy. Mary is a writer and Jesus follower. She loves camping almost as much as cheeseburgers. The Not Terrible podcast is two childhood friends who have been through the ringer, learned some tough lessons, and kept going. Jess and Mary share stories, advice, and lessons on each episode. They try to find humor in the chaos and learn from their mistakes in an attempt to feel less alone as they navigate life's journey.
I was thinking about all the ways that we say that we're going through a hard time in life. And I know, especially on here, we have used Lisa's term, our therapist and guru, and to sit in your mess. My interpretation of that phrase has evolved a little bit. And it doesn't mean just like idly sitting and watching everything just crumble around you, which is how I initially took it. No, Lisa just told me I was supposed to sit here and just
on a lawn chair.
Yeah, on a lawn chair and just watch this happen. But that there is an active way to sit in your mess. And I think it's kind of that phrase or that way of thinking is gaining popularity right now in terms of mental health, that you're going to lean into the pain or you're going to feel the discomfort or you're going to run towards the hurt. And that sounds so awful. Like, that just, why would anyone want to do that? I mean, initially, when you first hear those things, like, that sounds like a horrible idea. Isn't the purpose to not do that? Is to stay away from the pain and to stay away from the hurt? And now I'm learning that it's actually the most unhealthy way to handle just hard times. To jump into the beginning of this, we should first address how we avoid the pain, like, because that's your natural reaction first, if anything. I mean, you stub your toe and you grab your toe and you cry and you scream, like, you, there's no way you're just going to take a deep breath and go, wow, this really hurts, and I'm just going to ride this out until it's over, which they say is actually the best way to do it. Like, you just take a breath and feel it and until it doesn't hurt anymore, instead of, how do I make this stop screaming immediately? Yeah, like, your first reaction is, how do I make this stop?
Like, the defense
mechanism? Yeah, what are the practices? Like, what do we do to outrun the hurt? What do we do to jump over it, like, get to the next step, to not have to feel any of it? I mean, and obviously, what do we do to avoid it,
mm-hmm.
you know? But I think that, with that said, it's not the pain that we're avoiding. It's our response to the pain. It's the hurt feelings. It's the confusion. It's not necessarily the incident that, or the person, or the circumstance that's causing the pain. It's how it's going to make us feel. So it's the, like, emotions, the
discomfort.
Yes, the mm-hmm. discomfort that comes from it. So suppressing it, which is probably the most common. Well, I don't know. All of these are things that I do, so I'm not gonna.
I can relate to all of these.
Yeah, this isn't in order of appearance in Jesse's brain. This is just some of them. Suppressing, rejecting, denial, avoiding, and you have, like, your fight, flee, or freeze, which I think is, like, that you could probably categorize all of those into one of those three.
Mm-hmm.
Playing the victim, attacking or blaming other people. Self-harm, substance abuse, that those are off your cuff. Like, that's probably the first things that you're going to do.
I would add controlling.
Controlling, mm-hmm. yeah, controlling the situation. PsychologyToday.com said, avoiding negative emotions buys you short-term gain at the price of long-term pain. And I know it sounds kind of kitschy because it rhymes and whatever, but it's so true.
Mm-hmm.
Because talking about that, so you have the discomfort, you want to find an escape, and in my case, I drink, and then I feel relief, and then the next day, I feel discomfort again. Well, I found relief in drinking, so I drink again, and then the relief, and then what does this cycle mean? It means addiction. It means alcoholism. So now, not only do you have a problem with alcoholism or addiction, you also have the whatever little tiny problem you were avoiding to begin with. Mm-hmm. And
you just compounded
things. Yes. Yeah, you didn't get rid of your problem. You just added an additional one.
Mm-hmm. I think that's maybe what the majority of us do, is figure out a way to avoid the pain. So when we shop too much, or when we eat too much, or when we continually cut people out of our lives, or when we change jobs, or we move often, or we, like, rationalize smoking this or drinking this or saying this, like, all of it is a, even if it feels hard at the time, it's not the hardest thing. It's just a different kind of hard.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of us, if we look really closely at our lives, are doing that in some way.
Oh, yeah. I think that that's just, like, that's human nature. Mm-hmm. Like it's we're animals, and what do we do to avoid, like, just what I want the things that make me feel good, and I want to stay away from the main things that make me feel bad.
Something shiny.
Right.
Is what we're going for.
Mm-hmm. And I remember a friend of mine told me once, like, your feelings are your feelings. They're not right or wrong. They're just feelings. And I still struggle to even understand, like, I'm such, like, I live in my feelings, and my feelings are real, and they are present at all times. So I still really, I don't know what that means. I mean, it sounds good. It sounds like a healthy way to look at your feelings, but, and the thought that you have control of how you feel, that's insane. That's very foreign to me. But I've learned recently, or I read it somewhere where it made sense to me probably, that your feelings are just a source of information. Like, this is your body trying to help you assess what's going on around you. Like, it's
a regulating.
Yes.
Like, it regulates something.
Right. You just have to accept it. Like, it's not something that you have to dissect and break down and all the time. Like, it's just, okay, what am I?
You can notice this.
You can notice this, and what are my feelings trying to tell me? Are you accepting? Are you avoiding? Are you, whatever it is that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But I read in a devotional recently, which I've heard you use this, and I never really knew what it meant. And I was like, well, I'm not going to ask her because I don't want to sound dumb. But like you say things like capital T truth.
Mm-hmm.
And this devotion was talking about facts and truth. And so I think, okay, so we have our emotions, which is just the first response to information is how you feel.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have facts, like the who, what, when, and where of things. We have our past experiences to draw on.
Mm-hmm.
We have our own values and our own goals, those things that come into play. And then we have faith. And I think that this is kind of a part of where that capital T comes in, because we have the facts, like I said, the who, what, the when, and the where. So this is the capital T truth, which includes all the facts that we just said, but it also takes into account the full expression of God and how God created you,
mm-hmm.
what God has in store for your life, what your purpose is. There's other things that play into this.
So when I say capital T truth versus lowercase T truth,
mm-hmm.
I mean capital T, like, because my worldview is a Christian worldview. Like, I base choices, beliefs, my life around the Bible. Mm-hmm. So that is the capital T truth that I work out of.
Right.
So what are things I know to be true based on my faith?
Mm-hmm.
That's what the Bible tells me. And then I base everything else off of those truth. Yeah.
Right.
So what you're saying.
Right. And so that makes sense. So my big question is, how do I talk to God while leaning into the pain? Like, how do I have my relationship with God and also experiencing the suffering that is going on? And being faithful and continuing to build my relationship with God. And the obvious answer is that's the point. Like, the point is for you to be at that point in suffering and in discomfort and knowing this is where the growth happens. This is where the relationship with God grows and happens. And until you realize that, your suffering is going to be so much more than what it would be if you realize that you're not doing this alone. Not only are you not doing this alone, it has very little to do with you, right?
Maybe.
Yeah. I don't know.
I think where a lot of confusion starts for a lot of people is the idea that if you believe in God or you follow Jesus, that things become easier for mm-hmm. you, meaning like you have less problems and you have magical answers to things.
Mm-hmm.
And while...
Or you get preferential treatment.
Or you get better things than other people. And that's not really how it works. Mm-hmm. So I don't, as a Jesus follower, make more money and drive a nicer car and have less problems than other people. I still have problems. I still have conflict. I still have struggles. Like all of the things that are still there. I just maybe handle them differently because I follow Jesus than someone who doesn't follow Jesus. And I think where we have just been sold a bill of goods is the idea that once we enter into some kind of relationship with God, there shouldn't be problems anymore.
Right.
And then if we still have problems, well, then God doesn't exist, because why do I still have these problems?
Right. And this may be the place that I was going with perspective. The perspective you have when you do have faith, when you do have a relationship with God, and realizing not only are these things happening in your life as a sign, maybe, and I'm still fuzzy on signs and all of that, but that sometimes conflict is the sign. Maybe that's God trying to get your attention and say, hey, maybe you don't usually handle these things well. Let's try something different. Or maybe it feels like conflict and hurt and pain follow you around wherever you go. Okay, well, what does your relationship with God look like? And does it reflect that? I don't know. These are just, as somebody that's testing some stuff out, these are questions that I've asked myself. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, it's not like a where in the world is Carmen Sandiego thing, and I've got this like mystery to figure out, because I know that once that my heart feels peace, it's going to be really, really simple. Mm-hmm. But somebody that's grown up in such a complicated man-made religious situation that's full of sin and full of everything that's not God, I have to have a plan in place, or slowly work through my own past and the baggage that I'm carrying to get to a place where this feels safe, mm-hmm. where I know that I can rely on Him. And that I'm not alone. And it's not just because He hasn't showed up for me my entire life. He's always been there. But somehow it got manipulated in my little baby brain as a child that there were too many people claiming to reflect God's values that weren't godly at all.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of baggage to work through. But also the fact that I'm doing it, like I see the hope, I see the light at the end of the tunnel, but I still am human, and I still need some kind of, I need the truth. Mm-hmm. I've got the hard facts, and they're ugly, and they're gross, and they're just human.
Yeah.
So I've got to work through the truth part of this and get to a place where I know that this pain and this hurt is not in vain.
I think... Man, and I would just like to say as a disclaimer, the older I get, the less, like, I know, like, I have a couple hard things that I know for sure, and there's a lot of things kind of surrounding that just, I'm not sure. And the more I study and the more I learn and pray and grow, there's more questions than answers in a lot of things, and so I think understanding and sitting in that tension feels okay. It feels okay for me because I've been doing this for longer. For you, it makes perfect sense that you have a lot of demands and a lot of things that you need straightened out because they're all twisted. Mm-hmm. So when I'm offering things, it's not like a concrete answer so much as just like maybe a question or like maybe this. I don't know. Like they're just... there's a lot of things that I don't have the wisdom
right, but to you have handle. Suggestions based yeah. on so, where you come from.
Yeah, so I think one of the things that I still have to learn often is when I'm asking for resolution or help or answers, what God normally does is he doesn't change my circumstance. He changes my heart, meaning he breaks my heart in some way. He helps quiet my heart. He quiets my fears. He gives me rest. So it's not necessarily ever the way I think it should be answered. But that normally when I'm asking for a change, he brings it back to me. Mm-hmm. You know, like I would love for other people to learn some lessons, but what he often does is teaches me lessons instead. So it, the sin and the conflict and the struggle, it's all still there. He just teaches me a new or a better way to handle them.
This is where I am very, very rarely am I in the accelerated class, but I think in this situation I am, because my dad, one of the biggest consistent lessons that he gave my brother and I is whenever there was conflict or there was an issue or a fight or misunderstanding, he would listen to what we were saying, and then his immediate response was, and what did you do? What was your role in this? How can you change your behavior to make this less of an issue? Mm-hmm. Like, you can't trust other people, which that's kind of, but it, that's what happened. You can rely on you, and that's all you've got.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always, not always, but very often when I've come in prayer, I rarely ask to change somebody else's behavior. I always can, I really need help not feeling this way. And I don't know what the healthy way to feel is, because I really don't like these people and I don't want to deal with them anymore. However, the likelihood of them changing their behavior, it's just nil. It's mm-hmm. not going to happen. So if you could just, like, the nicest thing most of the time, I say, can you just make me not care? Because I just don't want to care. I just don't want to care. And I know that's not necessarily the prayer, because like you said, chances are he's just going to soften my heart or just not make it that he's just not going to, it doesn't have the presence in my life that it has at that moment.
It takes away some of the power.
Yes.
And it doesn't necessarily change a situation. It just maybe in some way takes away the emotion of it a little bit.
Right.
And
right.
most of the time, and I don't often pray for other people to be changed either. Mm-hmm. Like if I'm praying for someone else, it's normally in a positive way.
Right.
Like I don't think anyone's ever going to answer. Like, I don't know. I don't expect anything good to come of me being like, can you make them not be such buttholes? Like, mm-hmm. That's just not a thing. I can't.
Whenever I've prayed for someone to change, this is bad. I think my biggest prayer is like, can you make them love me, please? And I think I've probably been doing that since, like, I'm going to guess, like, the 7th grade. And I could rattle off some pretty big names here that I've been asking to love me for a long time, but I won't. But I know that that's the most, and it's just like, well, that's not a bad prayer, because you just want them to love, and that's nice to want people to love. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I know. It's completely silly, but sometimes that's a prayer.
I think maybe when we want, so kind of going back to like, how do you just sit in that pain, mm-hmm. and like, how do we do that? I know if you just, oh man, if you study how Jesus sat with people in pain,
mm-hmm.
It was just loving them, like, telling them they were important, making sure that they didn't feel shame, mm-hmm. Knowing that they didn't have to earn anything,
mm-hmm.
and like offering them your presence, but then also like being quiet if they want you to be quiet.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you to touch on something we talked about earlier off the air when because I feel like leaning into pain, because I've said some pain is self-inflicted. Like, when do you learn? Like, when do you learn to stop Facebook stalking an old boyfriend? Like, that's not going to bring you any peace. Like, is that leaning into the pain? No, that's just unhealthy and dumb.
Yeah,
like, don't do that.
Hunting for the pain.
Right, right. And then we talked about guilt versus shame. And I think that this is, a lot of people sit in the pain of shame versus guilt, and how guilt can be a temporary emotion that helps.
Right. So guilt should be a motivator. So like, if I, I don't know, if I did something to you and I felt bad about it and I felt guilty, mm-hmm. the next time that opportunity comes again, I'm not going to do that thing to you because I remember that it made me feel bad and I didn't like how it made me feel. So guilt changes. Guilt is a healthy feeling that leads us to fix something. Mm-hmm. The opposite of, and that's of God. Like, he can correct you lovingly with guilt in a way that like teaches you how to be better next time. Mm-hmm. Shame is not of God. Shame is something that keeps us trapped. So shame, if I do something wrong to you and I feel shame about it, I keep it a secret. I don't try to change it. I get stuck in the shame of it, and the stickiness and the hurt and the pain. I do more things to hide the hurt and the shame, and then I do it again, and I get stuck in this cycle of hiding, doing the bad thing again, hiding, doing the bad thing again. Shame is not of God. Anything that makes us feel like we don't deserve love or relationship or safety, that's the opposite of God. So when I feel pain, my reaction to it, I can have shame or guilt, and I know that guilt hopefully will lead to healing. Shame is going to lead to continued pain. And so while we often find ourselves in situations where we didn't cause the initial struggle or pain, sometimes how we react to it can keep us trapped in it.
And instead of sitting in that shame alone, this would be a good time to call on God. This would be the unhealthy way of sitting in hurt or pain.
Like victim mentality.
Yeah.
None of this is my fault. Everyone is always out to get me.
Mm-hmm.
If people would stop doing this, or people would mm-hmm. not do this, I wouldn't have to do this. Those
right.
are all like victim mentality, shame-based, like cycles of never taking responsibility for
yeah.
anything that goes on in your own life. Like, that's being a passive participant in your own life.
Right. And I don't think that bad people necessarily do that. Like, you're saying all those things, and I'm just like, yeah, and I'm going through the people in my life that do that and going, gosh, they make me crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But I know I do it. I have very specific situations. Probably the situations that still cause me the most pain and hurt is me saying, if they would only realize,
yeah.
if they would only understand, if they only knew my side of the story, if they, you know, just all these things. And in the scheme of things, that really doesn't, it really wouldn't change their hearts.
No.
How they feel about me is none of my business.
Yeah. And also, some of us, it's so ingrained in us because we were raised by parents who were victims
mm-hmm.
that we don't even realize we're living in that.
No.
So there is, in lots of ways, you have to ask someone to come into that and help you kind of go through your thought process to figure out where you're accepting shame or victim mentality or helplessness in
right.
your life that has been taught to you.
Like, right.
And
what's
you
the
don't
root
even
of this?
Know that
yeah.
it was wrong.
Yeah. What's the root of this? Because we really need to work through where this started and heal that situation. Or make you understand it better and get rid of those coping mechanisms so that you don't do this every time you're faced with conflict. Which brings me to our book club. Yeah. 13 things mentally strong parents don't do, raising self-assured children and training their brains for a life of happiness, meaning, and success by Amy Morin. And that's chapter one. And chapter one is...
Parents don't condone a victim mentality.
Which, there's a thousand ways that you can do this. It's not your, like, oh, sweetheart, it's not your fault, and it's this person's fault, and this is why I believe... I'll just give you a little preview. Mm-hmm. I believe they talk about a scenario when a child was diagnosed with ADHD and the parents decided that because of this child's diagnosis, he can't do the same amount of work that his peers are doing. And so he should be given less work. And, oh, well, they're not accommodating you and your diagnosis. And, oh,
they're
honey.
Out to so, get you.
Yeah, so you don't have to do that. And with the victim mentality means... You don't have to, oh, well, they're giving you these opportunities to catch up on work that you didn't do before you had your new medicine, or you're not taking advantage of the tutoring time or all these things. Well, no, you don't have to do all these things because you have this diagnosis. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to do that. It's even taking a child's specific, like, who they are as a person and going, how can we use this to make you the victim mm-hmm. and everybody else is wrong? And I had to reflect on my own situation and go, oh, my gosh, do we ever do that with Addie? Do we ever tell Addie, like, you can't do this because you have seizures, or you can't do this because you're in a different classroom? And I was like, wow. Luckily, for the first 7 years of her life, we didn't know she had this diagnosis. So we always expected just the normal amount of stuff, the mm-hmm. same amount of stuff. And we still, luckily, we don't do that. But now it's a little bit more present in my brain.
And you don't know what you would have done if you had known from the beginning. Like, you set her up for possibly a lot more success.
Yeah, we've had...
Not possibly. Yeah. You did set her up for a lot more success. Even unintentionally, because you just didn't know what was wrong.
We didn't know. And we've had psychologists tell us that they're children that get different diagnoses at an early age, and the parents carry them around on a pillow and expect nothing from them. And wow, do they end up with some very, very bratty kids.
Yeah.
Regardless of what their condition is, kids still can still be brats.
Yeah.
And when you start... And I think that's a little bit of parent guilt. Like, when your child's born with something and you feel bad and you want to make their life easier immediately, but letting them play the victim is the last way you're going to make their life easy.
Yeah. So Amy Morin, she wrote an article for Forbes, and I know that we're jumping ahead. We will talk about this a lot more, but on that idea that strong parents don't condone victim mentality. It says getting cut from the soccer team or failing a class doesn't make your child a victim. Rejection, failure, and unfairness are part of life. Rather than allow kids to host pity parties or exaggerate their misfortune, mentally strong parents encourage their children to turn their struggles into strengths. They help them identify ways in which they can take positive action despite their circumstances. So I think that goes back to, we all feel... struggles, mm-hmm. rejection, failure, unfairness. We can then turn those things into shame mm-hmm. and sit in them forever and be victims, or we can use them as a way to, like with guilt, learn mm-hmm. and do something better. I think if we come back to like sitting in our pain, we get opportunities if we sit in it and not just sit with the lawn chair, but sit and look and learn and listen as we're doing it. We understand not how to avoid all pain in the future, but how to avoid or to be better the next time this comes. And I think that's what sitting in it means, is asking for lessons and listening and being broken in a way that says, I want to do better next time. Not as a way to avoid the pain, but as a way to not keep doing the same things over and over again.
Sometimes when you're so far in a hole and it feels like it's overwhelming and there's so many things that have happened and there's so much hurt and so much disaster in a single moment, that you kind of have to take a breath and a step back and be kind of vague about your prayer or about your question and just go, this feels like it's too much. Just what am I supposed to see right now? Can you just make things a little bit clearer? Can not necessarily take away the pain, but what's the lesson? What's the takeaway? Like, big picture, help me get a little bit closer to what I'm supposed to learn here. And help me get a little bit closer to you in mm-hmm. our relationship while we do this. I feel like I've said, not in so many words, more like, hey, come on, let's get to it. But yeah. that's the thing. Instead of praying for this person to forgive me, or praying for this person to show up for me better, or just like kind of like a victim thing, like I need this person to do this and this person to do this, just going, take a step back. I don't need to do anything right now. I just need to sit mm-hmm. and listen. And I think that's a scripture that I've referenced in previous episodes that has really stuck with me. You need only to be still and God will fight for you. Mm-hmm. And that's been a big one that I have just gone back to and gone, hey, simple reminder. That's it.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think for somebody like my personality is fix immediately. I see something wrong, and not out of control, but out of love. Like, I want to make it better for you. I want to save people from pain. And that doesn't always come across with whatever I'm doing. But like, my action is never truly to control. It's to save others. Like, that just, good or bad, like I want to save others,
yeah.
Protect and mm-hmm. save others. And what I've learned repeatedly over the last few years is sometimes you can't say, okay, what is the lesson in this? Sometimes it's just to slow down. And a lot of my prayers recently have just been like, just give me a little bit of peace as this all swirls around me. Not for answers, not for a lesson, not for a pithy Instagram post of things that other people should know. Just like, peace in the midst of a storm is kind of where I'm at in a lot of things right now. And he always shows up. Like, he answers, like he gives me rest. He gives me sleep. He gives me laughter. And doesn't give me all the answers. Doesn't give me a lesson to learn that I can then write about in my journal the next day and use for the rest of my life. Sometimes it's just calm, like in the midst of a raging sea, that he just like settles the storm just enough to give me a little bit of reprieve. And I don't always like that answer, but.
Right. Wait, I think I said earlier, like, I get it that like he presents you with these situations and the pain and the hurt, and that those are the moments to grow. And me being a bitter, angry human for the majority of my life, it seems like a very, I think did I say masochistic way of doing things earlier? And it did. Like, to me, I was just like, why? Why, if he loves me so much, is he making me feel all this hurt? This doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
This is awful.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question. The end.
Yeah.
I think it's important to remember that so much of our lives is a consequence of sin, and not just ours, but of other people's. And while God is in control, he is not sending us pain and suffering and punishment as much as we are living the consequences of people's actions in lots of ways. And maybe not always our choice and not as a victim, but just like, we are in relationship with other people that are broken. We are in family with people that are broken. We live in a generational, like, there's just so many levels of sin that we live in consequence of. And even when we're trying our best to make wise and safe and healthy and loving choices, like, we are humans. We always sin. Like, that's our gig, is that we keep messing up. And a lot of times the pain that shows up isn't from God, but it's from people. Like that's where it's from. But I also do understand of like, if God's in control and if he really is in control of all of this, he could take this away. And why isn't he? Like, and then that kind of comes back to like, well, that's why I sent Jesus. Like, that's a whole other,
right?
Like a whole lot of levels and layers that we don't have. But like, I do understand why some people feel like I'm out. Like, I don't understand why a God could see so much suffering and not intervene. Like, yes, right. That breaks my heart too. And it breaks God's heart also.
Because like, you know, much like human sin, there's also free will and that's,
we don't have to, yeah, we don't have to say
that's your choice.
You don't have to agree with it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that even the furthest I've been away from God has been, and even in anger, I've just been like, yeah, let's pray for more faith, I guess. I don't, whatever, you know? And it's just like, I knew in the back of my mind, like, the seed was planted a long time ago by somebody. I'm guessing it was him. That then there have been occasional people that have just been there to remind me, like, hey, he's still there. Like, he's not gone. It's okay. And so, like I said, I'd just been like, wow, this is hard, you know, but I don't really have a lot of faith that you're going to fix it. So if I'm going to pray something, it's for more faith, I guess. So there you go. And it was very half-hearted, like just jerk prayer.
Yeah.
I think that happens too, where I didn't understand a lot of times when people would say, I'm praying for you. And I'll be like, well, don't. Nah. And yeah, it was. But then I was just like, and then somebody said, no, I will pray for you because I know you can't pray for yourself. And I was like, that makes a little bit more sense, I guess. Cause I mean, yeah, you're right. I'm definitely not praying for me. And, you know, just little seeds like that. And it took a lot of years of little things like that because, and I feel like I say this every episode, I'm a slow learner. And, but there's no other way I would have been able to receive the information with the childhood religious experience that I had and it get through other than very, very slowly. Because there's a little bit of learning and a little bit of healing and a little bit of learning. And then there's maybe a break for a little bit. It just ebbs and flows the way it needs to. Because, funny thing, he knows exactly how I need to receive the information.
I think that kind of answers your original question of, how do you sit in pain? Because our tendency is to skip over it. Mm-hmm. And, yes, we try a million ways to numb it. And if you think about maybe the bigger wound of you, having some really bad religious experiences, you've kind of been sitting in that for a couple decades, and paying attention to it when you had the strength and then just letting it sit for a little bit and then coming back. And like, he's not going anywhere. He's been patient, and healing always takes longer than we think it will. Like, to heal and to heal correctly and to heal all the parts, because there's always layers and it's never just one wound, because you feel like one is getting the attention it needs and then you see five more that are related to that. Like, mm-hmm. It's just layers and layers. And I think for most of us, if we're paying attention, we're always kind of sitting in it. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just, and we don't get comfortable and say we're never going to move, but we maybe move around within it a little bit and pay attention to one spot, and then we come back and pay attention to another, and then we can look back years later and see how it was all kind of working together. But I don't think it ever moves as quickly or as linear as our small little brains want it to.
Mm-hmm. And with our human perspective and struggling so much to stay within the moment, and then having that godly perspective after the fact and going, that's where you were. Okay. Mm-hmm. That when I was feeling alone and this, there you were. Okay. Now I see it. Yeah. 'Cause it is, even in the moments where you're sitting in the mess, it's really hard to look around and go, okay, where are you? I need you. Where are you going to show up? Mm-hmm. You know, and then just realizing, oh, wow, there was, you know, a cluster of a mess going on over here. But, wow, you mean I had a decent job and my bills were paid and
I had food in my belly.
Oh, okay. So you were literally taking care of the only things I needed. And I was really worried about whether this person liked me or didn't. And I thought the world was going to end. Mm-hmm. But it's really hard to be human and to be in the moment and to know that you actually are taken care of.
Yeah. And it's important. I can't explain too much of this because we just don't know, but like the Bible tells us that God's time and our time are not the same thing. Like he doesn't see time the way we do. Like it's not, it's not 10:32 in heaven or whatever time it is. Like we're not operating on the same planes. And
because when you're the God of the universe for all time, time is a little bit different than when you're going to live to be like 80 or 90 years old.
Yeah. And he like, it doesn't, mm-hmm. What feels, yeah, it's just not. So, mm-hmm.
And I think that goes back to, and this is, we're getting a little bit broad here, but also the generational pain. Like he looks at things that your ancestors or your grandma and grandpa, your parents experienced, and then they look to your grandchildren or your great grandchildren and how it's going to affect and how it may make things better way later. So some of these sacrifices, that's a part of the long term.
Right, like we were talking earlier before we hit record that like we always think people think about us as often as we think about ourselves, which is literally not possible. Like, so we are so selfish and like tunnel vision in our lives when he sees, you know, like 40 layers out in a way that we just can't, like because we're human and we're not God and he's God and we're not, you know, like just like that's it, like,
and that's the simplest answer.
The end part two. that's kind of where it comes back to me saying, like, again, I don't know. I feel like there are more questions than answers now because I see some things very, very clearly, and I like understand what that capital T truth is in the Bible, and then there's lots of things that we won't know until we get to heaven. Like, we just won't.
Not supposed to.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, that's a little bit on purpose. So how you feel about sitting in your mess right now? Sitting in the pain? Better or worse? Did we help anything with this conversation?
I think we did because I, you know, just like we do, we, whenever there is an issue or something presents, it doesn't matter what it is. You and I tend to like do all the research, get all the information, but we know nothing. We know nothing. We are literally just sharing our experience, and sometimes we overcomplicate it with details. Mm-hmm. With things that, you know, information's fun. It's fun to know things. Like, it's fun to do the research. But when it gets really, really simple, it's you and it's the Lord. And if you're in the moment and you're struggling and it does feel like a mess, you just have to call on him. That's it. You don't have to Google it. There's a lot of things. If there's something else that he wants you to use as a tool in dealing with this, he'll present it. He's going to take care of it, but it's just like me and everything. I'm going to complicate it every other way mm-hmm. before I go, oh, I actually knew this in the beginning, but I had to do, it's the same way I shop for shoes. Almost always the first pair of shoes are the shoes that I want. They're the ones that I needed. And I could have saved hours if I would have bought those shoes and gone home. But what if there's a better pair of shoes? I'm going to go try on these pair. And then I'm going to go to that mall and I'm going to go everywhere. But then chances are I'm going to end up, and I'm going to buy the original pair of shoes. And God is my original pair of shoes right now.
That's not how I shoe shop.
Oh, really?
To be continued.
Next episode, Mary's shoe shopping habits.
I think that is like what we often get all the information, feel like we're so smart. Mm-hmm. And then We're not. Kind of dumb. And not like in an insulting way, just like a, we like to make things harder than they are. And
yeah, that for me is where I realized that instead of sitting in the pain and feeling what hurts me, I was looking, like, even I use the research as a way of rationalizing the hurt away. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, you know, he has this issue and he probably should be diagnosed with this. And that probably is why he treated me that way. So this makes all the sense. It has nothing to do with me. It's fine. And that's another way that instead of feeling it, I just want to work through it. Just give me more information.
I can rationalize anything for other people. Yeah.
Right. And that's where Mary and I feel like maybe sometimes we're a little dangerous because we're just spewing out all these things we've read and heard. And this is just us sharing our story.
I think our first season together, we said that often of like, hey, remember, we're not trained professionals. Mm-hmm. Hey, remember, we're having conversations. And I think we got away from that a little bit of just reminding people that we are two, like, friends. We're two friends.
First, we're friends.
We're friends. And then we like to learn and we go to the same therapist. So we're learning a lot of the same things. And and our lives are not similar, but they, as humans, man, we all struggle with the same thing. Like, we're all very basic in our struggles. And we're learning things together, and we're sharing progress and not always perfection. And so when we share a story sometimes, it's not the period. It's not the end of that story. It's just a English teacher analogy. It's just a semicolon, and we're going to pick back up again later. So we try to be transparent and say this is what we're doing right now, and it's not always the answer. It's just the next story. And I think we got away from that a little bit of just saying, like,
we did.
Hey, we're still digging and picking. And also, like, our first season together, you were refusing to acknowledge lots of things that you feel okay with right now. And we don't know where either one of us will be in a year or two. Or
oh, yeah, absolutely. It would be wonderful if our lives were condensed into these 60-minute episodes and everything, like, we presented a problem and it was resolved, like this was some sitcom or something.
Fit neatly in the...
Yeah, but that's just not the case. Like, we're just kind of really doing life in real time with you. That's a part of...
what we're
sitting
doing.
Sitting in the pain. Like, this is us just sitting in it, and we're just sharing our pain as it comes along.
And a long time ago, what was it, a year and a half ago, when we sat down and started talking about, like, what a podcast with both of us would look like, we hope that after you listen to this, you're not just talking to the podcast episode in your car, but, like, talk to your people about what you're hearing or agreeing with or disagreeing with, or like, you're taking whatever we're doing and, like, not just storing it in your heart or your head as absolute truth of just, like, questioning and talking to someone about it. So
yeah, I think, like, in any situation, whether it's religion or politics
or love
friendship
or anything,
whatever it is, if you agree wholeheartedly with one person
all the time,
That's no good. That's
dangerous. Yeah.
You're bigger than that, and you have many dimensions, and you deserve more information and to have more opinions and to differ. That's what makes you wonderfully you, and same goes for us. So please, Mary and I
do not know anything.
We don't know anything, actually.
Like 0%.
No, zero things.
I like to pretend I know things, so I'm not going to lie. All right.
You ready?
Yeah, I am. I have a list in my phone.
You do have things that you're excited for?
Yeah, I started remembering, like,
I never
remember them while I'm here. So then I started a little list, and I almost texted you to tell you to do one, but I was like, well, that sounds bossy. I'm not going to do it.
Oh, well, that's okay. But because I don't have anything. But since I just changed the segment instead of what's not terrible to what are you excited for?
Oh, crap. I have to change the title in my phone.
No, just kidding. So what's not terrible, Mary?
All right. So So at the school district I used to teach at, I taught middle school, but when they go to the high school, the top 10 students in every grade, freshman through senior, they do this little banquet for, like, you know, I'm the top 10 in my class, but awesome. They also get to invite a teacher that has been impactful for them. And they do like a video telling the teacher, like, and you don't know who invited you. So, like, you get this email from the staff that says, hey, you've been invited. There's 40 kids here. You have no idea who you've been impactful for. They do a little video and they don't tell you your name, and the student just talks, and then and then the student stands up and finds you in the audience and brings you on stage.
I don't know how you're not crying right now.
It's very emotional, and I've been a couple times. And what's hard is I haven't been in this school district since 2015. So my students that I had in middle school are juniors and seniors right now.
Oh, wow.
So my last class that I had anything to do with will be seniors next year.
Oh, wow.
So I've phased myself out of this top 10 thing, and it's, that kind of stings a little bit to realize that there's going to be a time in that nobody knows who Miss Graham is at that school. And that was, you know, I spent a decade there, and that, I don't know. So a student invited me, and just, you can't make it through the evening without like a little bit of tears. And then so all the kids, and these are like, these are the top, like, I used to teach in a school district that has, I mean, their high school's got, I don't know, 4,000 or 5,000 kids in it. And so if you're the top 10 of a class of 1,500 kids, like, that's a, you're the smartest of the smart.
Yeah.
And I got lucky because I taught the advanced kids. So I didn't just have, like, I had a lot of opportunity to be around the really smart kids. But yeah, so I got invited. That's my not terrible for this week, is that that Melody invited me to the top 10 banquet and wrote me a nice little letter and did a video, and just, yeah, the kids still reach out and say, hey, Miss Graham, we love you and we miss you. And
yeah,
you, I get little messages on Instagram often too, of just like, I'm so glad that you're here and that I know you, and that just kind of warms my heart. What about you?
Well, I wasn't prepared for this, but I'll share it now because it just, that made me think. Max randomly, and it's only been in the, this semester, but I didn't know about it, but he looked up his preschool teacher at the Catholic church that we used to go to and sent her an email. He couldn't find her email on the school website, so he contacted the main office and asked for her email address and wanted to tell her how much she influenced him. And this is like, this was, so three, four, and five, like so it was like the just daycare kind of thing, and then preschool.
Yeah.
And he wanted to tell her how much she influenced his love for music by all the music that she used to play in the classroom and the songs that he still hears, and it makes him think of her and his time in her classroom. And he was just really, really grateful. And I don't even know how this came up. Oh, we were listening. We heard a song. And I was like, how do you know this song? And he was like, oh, Miss Flynn used to play this. And I said, in preschool? He was like, oh, yeah. And he was like, and she used to play. Like, he has basically, like, a Miss Flynn playlist of like the songs she would play at rest time and the songs she would play while they were like doing creative things and just all these. And he was like, oh yeah. He was like, she's the reason that I love all of this music. And I was like, and we listen to a lot of music at our house anyway.
Yeah.
And I just thought, he goes, yeah, I just sent her an email and told her how much I appreciated it and all these. And I was like, what? That's wild. And I was like, I'm really proud of you for like taking that. Like, oh, and I, gosh. And that, of course I was like, well, what assignment was this for? Like, who told you had to do this? And he was like, no, he's like, I just wanted to tell her. And I was like, oh my gosh. I know. I was really proud of him. So that's not a not terrible, but I was like, as a mom, yeah, that was a not terrible moment.
Not terrible brag on your kid.
Yeah. I was really proud of him.
Did she reply?
I don't know. You know what? Now that I'm sitting here, I haven't really followed up with him. So that's where I'm a terrible mother in this not terrible moment. No. I'll have to ask him. I'll ask him when I get home tonight. So we'll see.
That's awesome, though. Like, that is the bet. like as an educator, that's the best feeling, especially when it's been a while and you haven't forgotten who your kids are. Like mm-hmm. you always know who your kids are, but that you haven't thought about that person in a while and that little email comes up or that message on social media, just like as someone who has good words and can write good words, when I'm responding to them, I always think these aren't the right words. Like, I don't know how to tell you, I really appreciate you doing this. Like, I don't know how to make you feel what I feel right now for you doing that. So that's just really, I'm proud of him too.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we'll see you guys next time.
All right. See ya.
You've been listening to Not Terrible with Jess Hooker and Mary Graham. Connect with the podcast on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Not Terrible Podcast. Visit them at notterriblepodcast.com for show notes and additional content. You can sign up for their newsletter to receive bonus episodes and podcast extras. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast provider. Not Terrible is recorded in conjunction with The Chick McGee Show and Off the Air Podcast. Recorded in the Front Room Studio, this has been a Waco production.